As a dancer and choreographer for the New York City Ballet, Christopher Wheeldon was hailed as an innovator who honored ballet's traditions while expanding its boundaries. But last year, he surprised the dance world by starting his own company, Morphoses. It prompted headlines like Revolution in Tights and Gambler Shakes Up Land of Tutus and Leotards. His company recently performed a five-night stand at City Center to rave reviews, and I'm pleased that it has brought Mr. Wheeldon to the show today to talk about his unique vision. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You grew up in Britain and study at the Royal Ballet School. How does the British system of dance education compare to ours?
Well, I think probably the big difference is style, particularly between the English school and the American school. And that was something that was very interesting to me, particularly as a dancer when I came over from the Royal Ballet, having trained there to dance with the New York City Ballet, and taking on some of the traits of the American style versus the English style. I think the system, as far as the schooling is concerned, comparing the Royal Ballet School with the School of American Ballet, because those are the two institutions that I know, it's, you know, pretty much similar as far as, most kids start around 11, 12 and go through to 17 and then go off to have professional careers in major companies if they're lucky. But certainly that sort of the British style is much more about a sort of refined elegance, whereas the Americans are sort of devour space and attack movement with a much more kind of American way.
So that's something that must have appealed to you because you do most of your work here. But we were talking earlier about Anthony Tudor and how he wanted to choreograph from the start, and there was resistance to that. And the same thing happened with you. Are British dancers encouraged to think about choreography even when they're young?
Very much so, actually. I mean, the British ballet companies emerged similarly to the American companies with great choreographers at the helm, you know, choreographers like Sir Frederick Ashton and Sir Kenneth McMillan, and probably Anthony Tudor if he'd stayed. So there is this tradition of choreography, and at the Royal Ballet School there were annual choreographic workshops and competitions, and all the kids were encouraged to take part in some way. There were choreographic studies, classes, that sort of thing.
And you were doing choreography from a very early age. In 1991 you won the Prix de Lausanne for choreography and were accepted into the corps of the Royal Ballet the same year.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to leave Britain and join the New York City Ballet just a couple of years later?
I think in the UK, as kids, we grew up with this kind of very Hollywoodized image of America and New York, particularly in, you know, from movies. And I was just joking with a friend the other day. My father came on business to Florida when I was 8 years old and went to Disney World. And, you know, it's every kid's dream to go to Disney World when you're 8 years old. And last week, I actually went down to Orlando and finally got to go to Disney World. So
did it turn out to be what you'd fantasized?
Not so much. But, you know, it's still kind of a wonderful
place. But you did
place.
Get to meet Mickey.
I did get to meet Mickey, yes. I think, you know, also I knew so little about American ballet, and because there hadn't been a tour to London by the New York City Ballet, I think, since sort of 1980, and I hadn't had the chance to see them when they came. They were there last year, I think, quite recently. But for me it was the opportunity to dance a Balanchine work for my graduation performance. Graduating from the Royal Ballet School into the Royal Ballet Company, I danced False Fantasy, and suddenly was exposed to this wonderful dance, pure dance for dance sake. As I'd said before, sort of space devouring, music gobbling style that we hadn't been brought up on.
Is the story of your joining the New York City Ballet true? The one that says you came here just to be on vacation and you asked to attend a class just out of curiosity and wound up?
Yeah, I did. You know, I came. It's even funnier than that. I came here because I entered a special offer that the UK was having on Hoover vacuum cleaners at the time. And the offer was, if you bought a particular model of vacuum cleaner, you would get a round trip ticket to New York City on Virgin Atlantic, and they got themselves into a lot of trouble because, of course, a vacuum cleaner costs a lot less than a round-trip ticket to New York. So everyone kind of rushed out and bought this model, and I was one of the lucky few who actually got my ticket because I think they discontinued when they realized how many people were going to sort of enter this. So I got my round-trip ticket, and I came to New York, and the first day I took class with the New York City Ballet and was fortunate enough to be attending a class that Peter Martins was watching because he was auditioning Another Boy. They were about to have the big Balanchine celebration, and they needed men. And so here I was in New York. I hadn't even been down to see the Statue of Liberty, and I suddenly found myself in a position with a job. So,
and you must have liked it because you stayed 15 years.
I stayed 15 years. It was only going to be a one-year deal, and I stayed 15.
You thought you'd go back to the Royal Ballet?
I did. I asked, you know, basically I asked for a leave of absence for a year just for experience, and
But you've suggested in this conversation that the big difference was Balanchine, that was what really changed everything. It's odd to think of that Russian who came here and made something so American.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But so American, yet still so Russian, still so rooted in that tradition. I think, certainly having danced the Balanchine was my inspiration for coming, was part of the inspiration for coming to America, but also the idea of working with Jerome Robbins, who was still alive and still working at the New York City Ballet at that time, was enormously appealing.
But you also wanted to choreograph, and you met some resistance, because in this country, you have to retire before they will allow you to choreograph?
No, I mean, actually quite the opposite. I was quite straightforward about my desire to choreograph. When I joined the company, I kind of marched into Peter's office, and I remember plonking down a pile of videotapes and saying, you know, I choreographed too. Maybe you wouldn't mind taking a look at these. And I think the opportunities to choreograph here are perhaps more plentiful than they are in the UK. Peter was very quick to allow me the opportunity to work with the school and makes pieces for the students. And then from there, although I made several pieces before I graduated to the main stage, it was relatively quick, those opportunities coming up.
I'm talking to choreographer Christopher Wheeldon. In 2000, you retired from dancing. I hope it wasn't because of physical problems, because often dancers quit because they got pains. Suzanne Farrell, I think, has had both hips replaced. But you became the resident choreographer at the New York City Ballet.
I did.
So that was almost like living out a dream, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it was such an opportunity, and I couldn't quite believe that was being offered to me at the time. And it was a wonderful, a wonderful period of creation for me, working with fantastic dancers in, one of the great ballet theaters of the world.
Also choreographing for the Boston Ballet, San Francisco Ballet, but also a Broadway show. You did Sweet Smell of Success.
I did.
Was that very different? Jerry Robbins, of course, always went back and forth.
Yeah. No, I was a very different experience, but it was also a dream. I mean, I grew up, my parents took me as a kid, they took me to see pantomimes and musicals in the West End, and so to be, on Broadway suddenly was such a, such the fulfillment of a dream. And I think, if I hadn't been perhaps as fortunate as a ballet dancer, that would have been the career that I would have headed for anyway, as a Broadway performer.
Is it a very different process?
It's a much longer process, and of course you're working alongside a director and a lyricist and a composer. So you're a part of a team, whereas when you're choreographing a ballet, it's pretty much all on your shoulders. You're the director, you're the choreographer. You walk into the room and it's all on your shoulders. So it was nice in a way to share those, those artistic not burdens, but those just to sort of share the workload and be part of this sort of this interesting creative dialogue between people.
But you decided ultimately to go in the opposite direction and not share the workload as much, because in 2007 you started your own company.
I did.
That has to be a very brave undertaking for a young choreographer. Why did you do that? Especially today, where dance, it's hard to keep a company going because money is so tight. And we even see some of the most famous choreographers like Twyla Tharp not being able to sustain a company.
Sure. I think it stemmed from a desire to be more of a voice of my generation. As young dancers become more and more educated, it's just a very, very different time. Dancers go to school now when they're not dancing. You know, they're taking degrees. They're at Fordham. They're at Columbia. They are a very different generation, even from my generation growing up. And they come in to these big institutions, and quite often those big companies are still working on or still working kind of within the confines of the past, of a sort of a very kind of set way of working, you know. And I think I wanted to start my own company because I feel sensitive towards the way that young dancers are, and wanted to perhaps set a slightly different tone and create a slightly different environment for them. Still obviously focusing very much on creation and on new work and on devotion and the kind of sacrifices that obviously have to be made to be a dancer, but in my way, being able to create sort of an environment that I felt that they would be able to relate to perhaps a little bit more.
And one of your solutions was to not have a full-time company. You borrow most of your dancers from some of the top companies in the world. So you could pick the creme de la creme?
Yeah, I think...
Or is it people who would gravitate toward you, want to try out Christopher Wheeldon as part of a company, but not... and then go back to their regular jobs?
Well, the dream has always been to have a permanent company. But as we've been sort of moving through, kind of working towards that, I've realized that perhaps the possibility of having a group of permanent dancers, but also a group of visiting dancers. There's a fantastic dynamic when dancers come from different styles, from different backgrounds, and work together in an intensive way for a few months. They learn so much from each other. They bounce ideas off of each other. There's this great kind of dialogue that's created between them. And I think it enriches them as artists and creates this sort of fantastic new dynamic.
And you also use dancers of different ages and sizes. We see that a lot in modern dance, but not very often in ballet. For the same reason, because you want to have that complicated dynamic? Well, in the end, it all seems very cohesive.
Well, we're never going to be, the Paris Opera or the Kirov, where you have dancers who have been trained in a specific style and are lined up, perfect head height, huge corps de ballet going off into infinity. And that's not who we are. That's not who we set out to be. I think, individuals with distinct personalities are kind of the key to the success of the company. I think the audience get a kick out of seeing, real individuals on stage.
Where did you come up with the name Morphosis from?
It actually comes from the title of one of my ballets, which was a piece choreographed to the Metamorphosis Nocturnes by Ligeti. And it just felt to me that it sort of encompassed the right feeling for the company, the idea that we're bringing artists in from different media, different types of dancers together, and sort of putting them all into the melting pot and trying to come up with something new and fresh.
Well, I was talking earlier with Kevin McKenzie about how a choreographer chooses music. Your range is pretty wide. Ligeti, Beethoven, also a poem by Gertrude Stein. And I know that you didn't choreograph
right,
but you chose to present that dance.
I did. Well, such a fantastic, quirky and interesting little number. I mean, it's only, I think, maybe 3.5 minutes long, but it has, it's a piece called Shutters Shut by actually English choreographer and Spanish choreographer Paul Lightfoot and Sol León. They're a choreographic team. And it just seemed to me an important piece to be seen in New York that hasn't been seen before, and a very, very good contrast to some of the other work that was on our program. You know, Balanchine was really...
You had an orchestra in the pit, and you had them dancing without any music.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, the orchestra contributed to one part of that part of the evening. But, Balanchine was really onto something when he said that putting together a program is like a balanced meal. You know, it's important that there's variety, and that also there is something that, you know, the flavors don't want to clash. They want to combine in a satisfying way. And I think it's, you know, it's something that I'm learning as I go on, very, very new director. You know, last year we didn't quite get it right. This year people seem to be more satisfied. So it's very much a big learning process.
Well, you must have been gratified by the reviews. So the Times just raved.
It was nice to be recognized, even more so though by the audience. I mean, I felt like we had a very excited public.
One of the things you choreographed, Commedia, is from a score by Igor Stravinsky, but it was originally commissioned by Diaghilev in 1920. So did you see this as some kind of a reference to the history of ballet over the last 100 years?
Well, two reasons, really. First being that next year, of course, is the 100 years. It's the centenary of the Ballet Russe, and the Ballet Russe was so instrumental in the way that ballet, you know, exists today, and was pioneering in the collaborations between, you know, great visual artists and composers and choreographers. And so that was one of the reasons why I chose the Pulcinella Suite by Igor Stravinsky. And also just Stravinsky's philosophy, his words on the composition of Pulcinella. He was very resistant initially to the commission by Diaghilev. Diaghilev put this Pergolesi down in front of him and said, you know, what do you think you can do with these? And he looked at these pieces and thought, well, they're terribly old-fashioned and not really my cup of tea at all. And what he discovered was they were kind of the gateway to the beginning of his neoclassical period, where he understood how important it was to go back, look back into the past and take elements from something that has been so beautifully structured and then use that structure to make something fresh and new. And that just seemed to really, I think, combine very well with my philosophy for Morphosis.
Well, you're also trying to break other molds. You talk to the audience. You had short films of the rehearsal process and other things. A ballerina actually sewing up her shoes, so we get an idea of just how difficult all of that is. But the season at City Center this year was only 5 days long. Why so short?
Well, we're still establishing ourselves in a very dance-heavy city. There's a lot of choice, a lot of dance possibilities.
Well, we have a theater that presents dance 12 months a year.
Right, absolutely. And alongside, of course, the New York City Ballet, American Ballet Theater, the contemporary dance scene, there's a lot of choice for the public to go see. And we're not there yet. We're building our audience. It's only year two. And I think it would be presumptuous, perhaps, of us to think that we could fill, you know, a theater for 2 weeks. But that's, you know, that's where we're heading, I hope.
Well, based on what I saw during that run, you probably can, Christopher.
Thank you.
Christopher Wheeldon, I look forward to the next time you're going to have a season. When will you be back in New York?
We will be back in New York probably around this time next year again, sort of September, October time.
Well, I hope everyone listening remembers that and remembers when they see your name. This is really something to see. Christopher Wheeldon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.